Greetings and welcome to Eye to the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. And we have on the show with us today, again, Dr. Frank Tipler, whose very impressive credentials we went over in another recent podcast. But today we're going to talk to Dr. Tipler about sort of a different topic. Rather than discussing the fine-tuning of the universe and the origin of the cosmos, we're going to talk about academic freedom, which is an issue that I know Dr. Tipler is very passionate about. Dr. Tipler, maybe we could just change directions a little bit here and talk about another topic that I know you are interested in, and that is the area of intellectual freedom and academic freedom to follow the evidence where it leads. And I know that you have felt and maybe even experienced over the course of your scientific career that scientists are not necessarily as free to express whatever ideas they may have or to follow the evidence to their natural conclusions as you think that they once were. And I'm wondering if maybe you could expound on this a little bit for us. Where is science today? Is it in a healthy place as far as scientists being able to promote whatever ideas they think are right?
Well, I'm glad you asked this question because I actually wrote a paper on this, which is discussing the change in openness to new ideas in the leading scientific journals. Niels Bohr once said, if you have a ridiculous idea, but you think it might have a real possibility, you don't publish it. Someone else does and gets all the credit. You have no one to blame but yourself. Now think of that. If you have no one to blame but yourself for failing to publish a strange idea, which you think is right, it follows necessarily that no referee or editor can stop you from publishing. Niels Bohr assumes that's the case. He assumes that any idea you have, you can publish it. Remarkably, when Niels Bohr made that claim, it was true. In the German-speaking world, for example, you could publish, if you were a member of the German Physical Society, all German scientists were, there were no particular barriers against joining the German Physical Society, any competent physicist could do so. If you submitted a paper to the journal of the German Physical Society, Zeitschrift für Physik, the paper would automatically be published. No referee stopping you from publishing the paper. Now, physicists of the time, Max Planck, for example, was an editor of Annalen der Physik, another leading physics journal in Germany. Physicists of the time, Max Planck, for example, took the attitude that we should publish papers which are competently argued, not obvious crackpot papers. Only about 5% of papers submitted to physics journals are crackpot papers. We should publish them because we do not want to take the chance of suppressing a true idea just because it's contrary to our own views. He himself did that by publishing a paper by Albert Einstein he thought was completely wrong. Einstein's classic paper on the photoelectric effect that got Albert Einstein the Nobel Prize, but proved that light could not merely be a wave phenomenon, but had also to be a particle phenomenon. Max Planck later wrote in a letter of recommendation for Einstein getting a job at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute in Berlin, Albert Einstein has done some tremendous things. He's occasionally had some misfires, like this idea of the light being a particle of photon, which is obviously crazy, but we should forgive him these things. The point is that Planck published that paper, even though he, Planck, thought it was nonsense. He couldn't find any mistake in it. Good reason for it, because it's right. But he thought it was nevertheless wrong. He couldn't say why, but he took the attitude, if it's not obviously wrong, if I can't see anything wrong with the mathematics, there was nothing wrong with the mathematics, I have to publish it. I do not want to take the risk of a correct idea being not published. The things changed after the Second World War. Now, all papers to be published in physics journals have to go through referees, and increasingly the referees are being suspicious of any new idea, which means that it's very difficult for a new idea that goes against the established view to be published. Everett, by the way, who was the first to emphasize quantum mechanics is a many-worlds, many-parallel-universe theory, he probably could not be published now. Einstein certainly could not be published. None of his relativity papers could have been published. This outrageous idea that measurements of time duration are going to depend on the observer. That was absolutely contrary to Newton's established, quotes, idea of absolute time. It's obviously wrong. Obviously, Max Planck would have, if he were not Max Planck, but a contemporary physicist, would reject Einstein's paper on photons. Now, as a matter of fact, it was beginning to change in the 1930s when Albert Einstein moved to the United States. Albert Einstein submitted a paper to Physical Review on relativity theory. It was rejected by the referee. Albert Einstein's paper on relativity, rejected. It was on cylindrical gravitational waves. Remarkably, they published that same journal, which rejected Albert Einstein, has published two papers of mine on cylindrical gravitational waves. I'm an expert on this. At least the journal thinks I am. I think I would have liked to see this paper by Einstein, because I've learned about Albert Einstein, even when he's wrong, he's often right. I would like to see what Albert Einstein thought that was unpublishable about cylindrical gravitational waves. Even when he's wrong, as I've said, often I think he's right. He may have not have a mathematical proof of his intuition, but I'd like to see what his intuition was. I would have liked to have more freedom in the publication. Increasingly, the leading journals will publish only papers that are consistent with the views of the overall community. That's not how science advances. Science advances by ideas which go against the prevailing views. All great breakthroughs necessarily are of that nature. But increasingly, the scientific community is socially evolving to be hostile to new ideas. And I worry about our civilization, because our civilization depends on new technology, on new science. If we block out new ideas, our civilization will collapse. We need to return to the situation prior to Adolf Hitler, who destroyed the freedom of science in Germany. The great scientific philosopher Karl Popper once said, Adolf Hitler won the Second World War because he centralized all scientific thinking in Germany. Anyone who didn't agree with the government's view, you're out of science, baby. In as many cases, if you knew what was good for you, you left the country. Increasingly, universities these days will hire young scientists only if they can get a government grant, only if they can prove they will do officially government-approved research. So increasingly, you're having scientists all look at things in exactly the same way. If you look at things in a different way, you're just not hired. Richard Feynman once told a friend of mine, David Deutsch, of Oxford University, there'll be no more new great scientists, because everybody's being trained to look at things the same way. I, Richard Feynman, got my Nobel Prize, not because I'm smarter than everybody else. Everyone disagreed with this, but let's take Feynman seriously. Feynman knew more about Feynman than anybody else. He and only he had an insight into Feynman's mind. He said, I think differently from everybody else. I can solve problems other people can't solve, not because I'm smarter, because I have a different toolbox. Unfortunately, all scientists these days are given the same toolbox. They're taught exactly the same way. Anyone who has a different view is not hired, not allowed to be scientists. There, therefore, said Feynman, will be no more great scientists. We need to change it.
Yeah, I agree with you. This is dangerous at a very fundamental level, because when you push science towards conformity, how can you have new ideas? How can you have scientific advance? How can you have these revolutions that have led us forward in scientific thought? You can't have them. And I think that this is an area, Dr. Tipler, where we really appreciate your willingness to stand up for ideas that you believe in, that may or may not always be accepted by the quote unquote consensus, but nonetheless, you know, you're out there trying to make a good argument. And we think that very much in the same kind of spirit, that there are a lot of good arguments out there, some of which are not always agreed upon by the consensus. I liked the example you gave at the beginning about Einstein's paper where it was published by Max Planck, even though he disagreed with it, because he found that the logic was solid, that there was a good argument there, even if he thought that, you know, ultimately it wasn't right. Why can't we return to that? Why can't we return to the era where, at the very least, if you can look at an argument, you find that it has merit, it's citing valid sources to bolster its ideas, and the argument is logically consistent and mathematically sound, why can't it be published, even if it goes against the quote-unquote consensus?
Unfortunately, it won't be. We have to accept the way things are going. Fortunately, however, we're saved to some extent by the internet, because in physics, if you can't get an article published, you can always put it on the archive. Often really interesting ideas can't be published, and I've seen Nobel laureates in physics have complained to me about the difficulty which they have had getting their papers published. Mm. Virtually any Nobel laureate will tell you, certainly in the last 20 years, that the paper which got him the Nobel Prize was initially rejected. This is ridiculous. I mean, obviously, the people writing these papers were competent. They were not yet Nobel laureates. So why reject the paper? If it's a sound argument, it might be true. It goes against the consensus, but that's the nature of a Nobel Prize-winning paper. It goes against the consensus. One of the great breakthroughs in experimental physics in the last two decades of the 20th century was the discovery of high-temperature superconductivity. The men who did it, one was a young postdoc. He agreed to work on the project only if the senior member would agree never to mention that he had worked on this project, because everyone knew this particular substance, a ceramic, could not possibly be superconducting. It was. They published it, but they published it in Sight for Physique in an interesting way. That particular journal will publish a paper if it's submitted by an editor. The editor was a buddy, personal friend of the senior member. The senior member just gave him the paper. He just published it as a gesture of friendship. It never went out to a referee. Had it done so, it would have been rejected, because everyone knew a ceramic could not be superconducting. Mm. Therefore, if they proved it to be superconducting, they messed up the experiment. So reject the paper. It was confirmed experimentally by two other groups, and then they knew it was right. They quickly discovered new superconductors. This particular superconductor did not follow the rules for superconductivity. We still don't really know how it works. It does. This paper would have been rejected under the standard ways of accepting papers today. So I think this is yet another example of why we need to reform the system.
Hmm. Well, Dr. Tipler, we appreciate you standing up for reform in scientific publishing and also for letting us hear about your really captivating ideas. I think that our listeners are going to have a lot to think about in terms of fine-tuning and the multiverse and determinism. And that concludes this edition of the ID the Future podcast with Dr. Frank Tipler. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.